It's Brian's World.
Episode 149, Season 6. Welcome to Brian's World Live. I'm your host, Brian James, author and radio host here on the East Coast. Been spending a lot of time working on my next book, TMW DSR 2. So I know it's been a gap since the last episode. But today's episode, I want to introduce you to someone who has been an important part to my mental health journey. I'm very open and very passionate about that conversation. And I want to begin the conversation about the science of mental health. Today, we'll welcome Dr. Theodore Oswala, specializing in neurology, psychology, psychiatry. He's been somewhat of a guide to my healing and is here today to answer some questions and have a conversation about mental health medication, a little bit about how it works, and a lot of bit about how it can help you. Let's get into episode 149, Brian's World Live, baby. All right, Dr. O, so what does your typical day look like?
Oh, man, my typical day starts about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning. I see patients prescribe medications, listen to their stories, their needs, and I also give injections for, there are some people that they are on monthly or bi-weekly injections. Mm-hmm. But a greater part of my practice is also those that have sexual disorders. A lot of people have erectile problems. They can't get an erection, or even if they get an erection, they 1 or 2 minutes, they're done. Yeah. So it's a problem, premature ejaculation. So that is a greater part of my practice. So generally, my day runs that way, and I'm there till 6, 7, seeing patients, taking care of their needs. And by evening time, I return calls. And go home and do paperwork. And
wow.
Go through that cycle.
And then do it all over again.
Yes.
Wow. Well, it's great to have you on the show. The goal for today is to discuss mental health medication. You know, I kind of wanted to start with the actual science behind it, you know. So can you explain a little bit about the chemical balance of the brain?
Okay. Well, the brain is made up of billions of nerve cells called neurons. Mm-hmm. And these nerve cells carry information, and information from one nerve cell to another, the nerve cells don't touch each other. So they have in between them what we call neurotransmitters. So these are chemicals that carry information from one nerve cell to another. So it's been found that in some situations, when the neurotransmitters or these chemicals are low, people feel depressed. Mm-hmm. Other ones, and these are specifically serotonin. Serotonin, when they are low, serotonins are found in the brain, central nervous system, and also in the gastrointestinal tract. So in the central nervous system, which is mostly the brain, yeah, when the serotonins are low, people feel depressed, down, draggy, and all the symptoms of depression.
Wow.
But there are other neurotransmitters like dopamine. Dopamine, the effect of dopamine is it gives you energy, it pushes you, gives you the drive, makes you active. Mm-hmm. So when dopamine is high, people become psychotic. They hear voices, they're acting really fast and hyperactive, talking a lot, cannot sleep. So their body is on overdrive.
Wow.
So that is dopamine. We also have other neurotransmitters like norepinephrine or noradrenaline. So remember the flight and fight mode?
Yeah.
So when you have adrenaline, when it is high, people are moving fast. They're doing things normally. But the flight and fight mode is high adrenaline that pours out when you're threatened or when you are frightened. But generally, low levels of adrenaline will also make people feel depressed and sad. So most of the medications work with these three neurotransmitters, but also there are other ones that that things like GABA, it's called gamma aminobutyric acid, GABA, G-A-B-A. When GABA is low, people become anxious, they become nervous. So when GABA is high, people are calm. So GABA inhibits you, it calms you down. So when you have low levels of GABA, people are nervous and anxious, but the same pathway carries depression and anxiety. So that's why a lot of the times people who are depressed also feel anxious.
Wow.
So it's a tremendous balance. The way nature has made it, the human nature is just very complicated and unbelievably well coordinated. But of course,
it's like a work of art. Like I said,
yes.
to hear you describe it, it's just kind of like so many working parts. It's just like,
right.
Wow.
And they work in tandem. Once anything goes wrong, boom, the whole body is out of order.
This might be kind of like a... Might be a little bit of a dumb question, but it's on my mind.
Yes.
Like the chemicals or whatever, the chemical imbalance or whatnot, like, is it like microscopic? Like, can you actually see it like under the microscope?
They are chemicals. They are like fluid. It's not like something you go and test in the lab.
Okay.
Yeah. So they are very microscopic. And if we were doing video, you would have seen diagrammatically seen how these things work. So they are in little capsules. So they are released. Once they are released, they go across and touch the cell on the other side and stimulate it. It's like electricity. You plug electricity from the wall to your say radio set or television set. Once you turn the switch on, boom, electric current moves and stimulates the capacitor in the radio or in the television, and it lights up. Power comes out.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing how our bodies work.
It is. Like, it literally is just a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? It's beautiful to... Like, I love to hear, like, how, it works. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things I think about all the time. What role does medication play in those chemical imbalances that may occur in the brain?
Okay. So, remember we said... I'll take one example, depression. Mm-hmm. When the serotonin level is low, people feel depressed.
Right.
Now, nature has made the brain or the body in such a way that the specific amount of serotonin we need in between those nerve cells are normal. So they are made in such a way that if it is too much, there is a mechanism that clears it out, that removes the excess. So the medications, what they do, they inhibit, they block that removal process. So, and that is what we call reuptake. So when you have a need for serotonin, it's released in between the cells. The excess is taken out, is uptaken, is taken up and returned back to the bags or to the sacs where they are stored. So what the medications do is they block that reuptake mechanism. And that's why the medications like Prozac, Paxil, Lexapro, they are called serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors. So they inhibit the reuptake of those serotonin. So you have enough in that space.
Mm.
So it blocks that mechanism that takes it out. So you now have a backlog, which is what actually you need to increase the level so the depression can be treated.
Wow, I got you. Okay. So what would you say to someone who, sees or hears that information and is like overwhelmed? It's like, wow, like what is going on? You know what I mean? Like what do you say to someone who's like, it makes them a little uncomfortable?
So the thing is... The medication and the mechanism by which these things work are very complicated, but it serves the purpose. So anyone who is amazed or worried about the mechanisms of how these medications work is to, what I do normally is to clearly educate them on how it works and how it could help improve their mood. And this is better with those with depression because they can really understand what you're talking about. And those that have, say, schizophrenia or psychosis, their mind is racing, they are actually psychotic, they can't reason with you, it's almost impossible to explain this, how this will work. So, but people who are depressed or have anxiety, they can understand you because their mind can still comprehend what you're talking about.
Right,
so
right.
We explain to them how these things work. But what people are always worried about is the side effect of these medications.
Mm.
Even though these medications will affect the serotonin level, improving the depression, it works. It also has effect on other parts of the body and other parts of the brain, which are the things that cause the side effects that people worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in course of this, the show, we can talk about the side effects of these medications and how we can manage them.
Yeah, definitely, because that's one of those things that I feel like you never forget on, like, those commercials that come on. It's like just a ton of side effects. And, I mean, even that can be overwhelming sometimes. And it's
Absolutely.
know, learning how to navigate that. Like, how should patients expect to deal with those side effects?
So what I do normally is start slow and go slow. It takes the body, for example, the body is producing or keeping a certain amount of the neurotransmitter or chemical. And now you give a medication that quickly increases the neurotransmitter level. Because you load the person fast, the side effect profile will hit the person more. So what I do is introduce the medication slowly. For example, Lexapro, the maximum dose is 20. You have 5 milligrams. So someone who is depressed, I give 5 milligrams and I say, listen, take 5 milligrams for 1 week to 2 weeks. After that, increase it to 10 milligrams. That way, the side effects slowly occurs. And the good thing is these side effects are not permanent. So it happens and slowly the brain gets used to it and the whole body adjusts to it. And the person begins to do well and not feel a lot of the side effects.
Right.
But there are some side effects that will always be there as long as you're taking that pill. But generally, those severe side effects that make people want to stop taking the medication, like vomiting, dry mouth, the sweating, those ones will slowly go away. People have sour taste in the mouth, but those will last maybe 1 week. After 1 week, they're good. And this is because of the effect of the medication on other parts of the brain.
Which is something that the brain gets used to.
It gets used to. So the brain adjusts itself until it comes to be able to manage those effects, and the person does well.
Interesting.
Yeah. So things like antidepressants across the board, especially the serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors, the SSRIs like Paxil, Prozac, Zoloft, Lexapro, and citalopram or Celexa, would very much affect sexual effect on the body.
Yeah.
Both male and female. And for men, it could decrease sex drive. So people who were sexually active will lose interest completely. Some, even if they have interest, it will take them a long time to achieve orgasm. So you have a guy firing for 1 hour, doesn't achieve orgasm. It's very frustrating for the man, but also sometimes the girls like it because your man is staying long enough.
Yeah, she's probably happy.
Yeah. So sometimes I use those also for those that have sexual disorders. So that is one. Then also for women is more frustrating. It takes forever to achieve orgasm. It also could cause vaginal dryness. So it makes sex uninteresting.
So it's like the exact opposite, for real.
Yes.
Wow.
So that's one of the major side effects that people worry about. And if they have their way, they won't take those medicines. But the good thing is some people use those side effects for the beneficial part of it. Another side effect that we worry about is vivid dreams. Sometimes people on antidepressants have vivid dreams. They dream so much and the dreams appear so real.
Wow.
They're sleeping, but their brain is still very active.
So it's like they get no rest, really.
They get no rest. So in the morning, they have slept very well, but they don't feel well rested because the brain did not get a good sleep. Some SSRIs will cause this feeling of hotness in the body, excessive sweat, and some will cause weight gain. So it's all kinds of side effects. But the irony is this. One person or two people will take the same medicine. They don't have the same side effects. So there must be a genetic component why Mr. A or Ms. A will get the same side effects and Mr. B will not. That is still what we do not know.
And that's where, you know, like I guess the monitoring and everything after starting a new medication comes in. Got it. Okay.
And sometimes the other antidepressants, for example, there are some based on what they do. They help improve your mood, but they can also increase your appetite and also sedating. So we use that when the person comes, they're not sleeping well, they're depressed, they don't have good appetite, they're losing weight, we give them such medicines.
Yeah.
So their mood improves, they eat well, and they sleep well. So it's a three combo, it's one in three, or three in one.
Yeah.
Sorry. medication. So these are the things. That's why doctors are trained, and you go to med school, do pharmacology, know the benefits and side effects, and know how these medications work.
Yeah.
So when you have a patient who comes in, and based on what the symptoms are, you will make a choice on what medications to use.
And it's a very important choice, yeah.
Very, very important. Mm-hmm. And you look at the side effect profile. And this is when I used to be a clinical assistant professor at University of Maryland Medical School.
Yeah.
I would teach students and the resident doctors how you make a choice on what medication, because it's not, there are many antidepressants and many antipsychotics. You don't just see someone comes in and you choose one. And I say, okay, why do you choose this particular one? You have to give me a reason why you make a choice. Mm. There are some medications that will cause severe weight gain. Mm. So you see someone who has a propensity to gain weight. You can't use those medications that will worsen the weight gain.
Yeah.
There are some.
Because that's dangerous as well.
Yes. There are some that will increase blood sugar. Someone has diabetes or family history of diabetes. You cannot use those medicines on them. So you end up predisposing them to diabetes. So these are all the things. So when you go see a doctor and they're asking you different questions, asking you about your family history and all that, it's all geared towards making the right diagnosis and choosing the right medication that will help you. And most times, 99.99%, the medication is the correct one for those who are well-trained.
It is complicated. It's a lot to understand, but really, also understanding that you guys have legit dedicated your lives to this and to basically trust you through the journey, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's why you go to med school 6 years.
Yeah, I was just going to say, all that school.
Go do residency.
Yeah.
Of course, first degree, 4 years, med school, 4 years, residency, 4 years, and fellowship, 5 years, and all that is a long journey. It's a long journey.
Yeah.
So by the time you spend 12, 13 years of your life schooling, you should be good enough a doctor, because it's life and death. You can't make a mistake at all.
We appreciate it, because that's a big responsibility to carry, you know what I mean? So we definitely appreciate that. In terms of like the testing for these medicines, because I know some people are like, you know, just, you know, how these things, how do they know it's going to be safe, or how do they know this, how do they know that? How are these medicines tested?
So before the FDA approves any medication, it passes through a process. So the pharmaceutical company manufacturing these medications will first of all do the animal studies, and that is checking, because if we are just higher animals, the rats, the cats, the dogs that are used for these testings, they have the same two kidneys, we have brain, everything. So they do it in the animal, then look at the animal, look at the side effect profile, draw the blood, look at the levels, and over time monitor the animals and see what these medications do in those animals. Record it. Once the animal studies go well, these things are reported to the FDA. FDA will look through and say, okay, it goes to the human trial, but the subjects are made to sign a consent. The researcher would discuss with the subject the possible side effects, all the things that could happen, and say, hey, listen, you decided this is what we're doing, you could have this, and whatever side effect you feel, let us know. And once the initial one is done for with a restricted group of people, few, no problem, no deaths, no major issues, then it's expanded to a larger cohort, a larger group of people, no problem. Or they find out little things like nausea, vomiting, headache that goes away. And they look at the dropout rates. That means if you take 100 people and you're doing this trial of the medication, and if 60 people say, no, I can't do this anymore, the side effect profile is too much, that medication has a problem. But if the dropout rate is 5%, five people drop out because, oh, I can't do it anymore because my granddaughter had a baby, I need to travel out of town to go see, or I have a headache, I can't continue, it's not tolerable. So just as long as you have very few dropout rate, then it's a good medicine. Then is the extent to a larger population, then a much larger population. And all the data are collected and analyzed. They look at, okay, if with this medication, 5,000 people took it, one person had nausea and vomiting, one person had this, one person had this. It's not a bad medicine, because it's just very few people had severe side effects.
Yeah.
But the good thing is this, they record every single side effect, even if it's one person that had leg pain while they were taking the medication, is recorded as a side effect. So when you see medications advertised on TV and say this medication is for depression, tell your doctor to look at it. But if you're taking this medication, you may have diarrhea, you may have vomiting, you may have headaches, you may have sleep problems, and they go and say all and all and all. Mm. It is to take away the liability. You have informed the patient that, listen, any of this could happen. And also the doctors, whoever is prescribing it, will tell you, well, listen, this medication is good, but it could cause you headache, it could affect your sleep, it could make you to have a poor erection and all that. And you will say, well, okay, I'm depressed, I just need to get well. Erection, sex is the secondary thing to me now. You say, okay, give it to me. They document it, that they discuss the benefits and the side effects with you, and you said you wanted to take it. And for me, I always tell my patients, these are the side effect profile of this medicine, but I have to see you in 2 weeks to reassess, to see how you're faring with it. Is it really working? Is it costing you too much problem? If it's working, but it's costing you too much problem, we stop it and look for something else. But if it's working and the side effect is minimal and tolerable, we stay with it, we ride it out. So a lot of people are persistent and they take the medications, and over a time period, the side effects go away. So that is that's how it works.
Mm-hmm. And again, it's just it feels more like a trust thing between the patient and you, basically.
Yes.
Okay.
And what you must explain these things to your patients. Mm-hmm. Once you explain it to your patient and they trust you and you know what you're talking about, most patients will take the medication. But also, you have to let them know the possible things that could happen. That way, if they get any of those side effects, they'll call you. I've had patients call me, say, hey, doc, the medication is, I'm having too much diarrhea. I say, okay, stop it. Stop the medicine, and let's see in a week. By then, all the medications have been washed out of your body, and we can do something else. I tell people, always let me know. And you open that communication channel, people feel free to call you. I answer my phone all the time.
Yeah.
That way, nobody will have an excuse not to get back to me if they have a problem.
Yeah. And again, we appreciate what you do, man, what you dedicate your life to.
Thank you.
Yeah, man. So, you know, let's say there's someone who is hearing this and it is ready to take that step and is ready to make a call. How do they approach their doctor about, you know, beginning medication for treatment or just exploring the idea of it?
Yeah, for those who have never seen a psychiatrist, they see in their primary care. So you're hearing this, let your primary care know that you heard something that you think will help you. Refer me to a psychiatrist, and they will do the referral. Most people don't even need referral. Medicaid and some insurance companies, the PPOs, you don't need referral. You go see the doctor, but the most important thing is you must tell the doctor every single thing. Be patient, because most of the mental illness, there is no physical measure of knowing what is going on. So that's why psychiatrists take detailed history, ask you questions about this, and you expatiate on it more. They ask more questions. That's what I do. You need to talk to the patient detailed enough so that you don't make the wrong diagnosis. Once you're patient enough and get the right information, then you can prescribe the medication. But I always, if you are hearing it and you want to get medication, ask your doctor to give you details. Sometimes I have had to print out the medication, the side effect profile, how it works, and give the patient. I say, listen, you go read it up and come back in a week. Let's talk. By then, the patient is well informed on the illness, the medication, the side effects, and how he could get help from the medication. The patient comes in, we talk about it, because they are the ones taking the medicine, not me. So you have to really explain in details how these medicines work. And most people will go by what you tell them, what you advise them to do.
I know for me, a big thing, you know, personally, was literally like taking that first step and making a call in general, you know?
Right. So most people think seeing a psychiatrist is such a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And especially culturally, some people think, oh, if you see a psychiatrist, you are a weak person. No, even the strongest people. I used to work at the Veteran Affairs Hospital. Tough military guys still get help when they need it. So there's nothing really wrong. I see every professional in my practice. I see doctors, lawyers, IT specialists. I mean, the big and the mighty, the little. So different people, different problems. I think it's time we forgot about the stigma of saying, oh, I'm seeing a psychiatrist. No, if you can boldly tell somebody, I have diabetes, I have high blood pressure, what is wrong with saying I have depression and I'm getting help?
Yeah, it's like a shame attached to it for whatever reason. Yeah,
exactly. Especially in our race of those of us black colored people, there is this myth that mental health is either spiritual or something. So there is no cure for it, there's no help. No, I want to tell you this, that there is help out there. Mental health is physiological. There is a reason why it happens, and we have known it can be taken care of. There is nothing wrong, and I meet a lot of Christians, of course I am one, I meet a lot of Christians who they don't want to get help for mental health, and they think it's some demon or spiritual thing.
Yeah,
fine. Let's get the help that we need. People have come to me and they claim spiritual stuff, and once I put them on medication, it goes away. So what does it mean? The medication drives the demon away? Well, whatever it is, medications can help. And that you are a Christian doesn't mean you cannot get help. In the Bible, the great Saint Paul, the Bible said he was bitten by a snake and he threw it out. So he was stoned to death. He went through all kinds of things, but he said that he had a sickness which he asked God to take away from him. God said, my grace is sufficient for you. God never healed that sickness. But what did St. Paul do? Once he ran into Luke, St. Luke was a physician. He took Luke everywhere he went on his missionary journey. So St. Paul, one of the greatest apostles, Christian, if he could take a physician with him who was treating him, what about you and I?
Right.
So don't spiritualize everything. Go get help. And another thing is, people are worried, oh, if someone is going to know that I have an illness. I say, if you don't get help for your mental illness, everyone will know you have an illness. But if you get help, no one will know except the people who are in-house, your primary people, wife or husband, children. Yeah. So the best thing is to get help, and no one will know you have an illness. That is it. So let's all go get help. Help is out there. We live in a very stressful world, very, very stressful world. So if the help is out there, go get it. COVID-19 is a big, big problem.
Yeah.
A lot of people are so anxious. So anxiety has gone high. This is made worse by loss of job, loss of income.
And loss of loved ones too, yeah.
Loss of loved ones. I mean, oh my God.
It's unbelievable.
She has lost 5 family members.
Wow.
5.
Oh my God.
So you can imagine the trauma from this virus.
Yeah.
So she is scared. She's so worried. And it's unbelievable. Now, the virus is real. The vaccine is out there. I was speaking in another podcast on Saturday in Anne Arundel County about the effect of the COVID-19 on the mental health of people. It's causing so much stress.
Yeah.
But the good thing is the vaccine is out there.
Yeah.
So as a people, as a race, black people, colored people, let's go get the vaccine. Forget about the thing on social media. This vaccine is not sent to kill you or exterminate people. No.
Or put a chip in you.
Put a chip in you. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got my vaccine. I don't see any chip. Nobody knows where I am.
Yeah.
And why? There are many people getting it. So go get it. It will save lives.
Yeah.
It will prevent the full-blown viral infection.
Yeah, and whether we talk COVID, whether we talk, you know, just life in general, you know, it seems like the last 365, give or take an extra month or two, it's been very difficult for a lot of people. So I guess it is safe to say that, you know, people are experiencing thoughts that they have not experienced before. And all of this entire conversation is new to some people. But as we continue to have this conversation, hopefully the stigmas will be a thing of the past, you know?
I mean, I think it's all based on historically how mental illness was being managed. many years ago when there were no medications. So a lot of those people, once you are diagnosed with a mental illness, you're gone. You're written off. You're locked up in a place. Once you act out, they put you in cold jacket with ice blocks and all that to calm you down. But now none of that is done. You're given a little pill and it helps people calm down.
Yeah.
So the science has gone real far ahead. When I went into psychiatry 20 some years ago, 96. So it was there were not too many of the medications, but every day we see newer, more effective medications, less side effects, and it's becoming a big deal. So people don't really need to hide their problems anymore. Go get help. There are so many things that we could treat now. And people are stable, mentally ill people are getting married, living a normal life, and being more productive.
Yeah.
They're no longer as disabled citizens. So they get a job, live in their own houses, work, earn money, buy cars, and live like anybody else.
Yeah, it's like get your life back type.
Yes.
Definitely.
But you need to take that initial step.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Initial step. One of the problems is this. When people are depressed, they're so weak, they're so tired, there's no motivation, there's no drive to do anything, including going to get help. So family members, loved ones need to help them. Say, hey, listen, I heard on a podcast today, somebody was talking about it, and I see you look depressed. We'll help you. We'll take you to a doctor. There is help out there.
Yeah.
So you encourage them to go get the help. And once people do it, they get well, they spread the good news. That is how it works.
Let's say somebody wants to take that step and give you a call. How may they get in touch with you if they're in this area?
Yeah, if you're in the area, you can call me. My phone number is 301-577-9111, 301-577-9111. Mm-hmm. And I am on Annapolis Road, 9470 Annapolis Road, Suite 117 in Lanham. Or you can go online and just search Theodore C. Oswala, psychiatrist. I'll pop up, Google me, you'll see me, and you can come. We have a therapist that could also help you. So we work together. There are sometimes, it's not all medicine. Some problems are just, you can get help by psychotherapy. The therapist will talk to you, help you walk through some stressful situations, whether it's marital, between you and your wife or partner, and work together. If you really, really need medication, we do it. Because medications are good, even though they have side effects, we really do not rush to give medications unless they are absolutely needed.
And believe it or not, that's another way that makes people feel better. It kind of takes, like, I know that's something that you mentioned to me, and it kind of took the pressure off of all of it. You know what I mean? Just kind of allowed me to, you know, take a second and just think about some things. So, yes, definitely. Family, if you want to reach out to Dr. O, this is the man right here. He's able to help you out. Dr. O, we appreciate you for stopping through tonight.
Thank you.
It's about to be a hell of a night.
Hey, yo, it's Tayo.
I'm Melissa Carr.
This is Ray Shrimmer.
It's Brian's World Live.
You know what it is.
Y'all turn up.
All right, hey, if you got any questions about today's episode, don't be shy. Just send me a nice little email at briansworldshow@gmail.com, or even if it's not nice, I'll still read it. And of course, you can get in touch with me on Instagram and Twitter at briansworldlive. If you are someone who is dealing with mental health issues, or you just have questions and things that you may want to get help for, don't be shy in talking to your doctor. You could do like I did. I used my primary care physician to lead me to Dr. O in his office. Whatever you do, just take that first step. I know that was the most difficult for me. God bless.